I'm your host, Aaron Rittmaster. I'm here in the Man Cave editing up Diz Dad's podcast number 151 for you. It's a continuation of episode number 137 that we recorded with Eric Anderson, Richard Grady, and Scott Henney. And tonight on the podcast, we're continuing our discussion of Disney movies 2014. So the next movie I want to talk about is the May 16th scheduled release of Million Dollar Arm. And this is a film that, to me, kind of snuck up on me. I mean, so far, everything else that we've talked about is something that, you know, I've seen news releases about. I've seen a trailer here or there. There's been buzz about it. And this one just kind of snuck under the radar. And I'm incredibly intrigued by this project. Million Dollar Arm is a sports drama based on a true story of essentially baseball pitchers in India who were discovered by American baseball scouts, including Tom House, who's a fairly famous pitching coach and sort of a guru of pitching mechanics. And what he basically did is, the true story, you know, went to India to find cricket bowlers who he thought could be taught to be major league quality baseball pitchers. The whole premise and story is incredibly intriguing to me. It reminds me of some of the great, you know, Disney sports movies that they've done, like The Rookie and, you know, those kinds of films, more than the kind of silly older films that they did with sports like Angels in the Outfield. It really strikes me as good storytelling with a sports backdrop as opposed to stilted. I don't know. Anybody else when we were getting ready? I mean, had anybody heard of this one before we started getting ready for the podcast?
I hadn't heard anything about it. That was the only one of the one of that list that I hadn't heard anything on. You know, again, like I said, all the others, you've heard rumors or seen trailers or pics or something. This one, huh? What was that?
Yeah.
I hadn't heard about it either. But like I said earlier, being a history buff and this being based on a true story, this also intrigues me, Aaron, as far as the fact that they can take, you know, what happened and just the whole concept of Indian or Asian cricket players and teaching them how to be baseball pitchers and succeeding at that,
right,
intrigues me.
Yeah, and the cast is pretty impressive for a film that, you know, none of us have heard anything about. I mean, you know, John Hamm is the star with Bill Paxton, and Alan Arkin is in it, and Lake Bell. I mean, Asif Mandvi from The Daily Show. It's a good cast.
John Hamm from Mad Men.
Yeah, he's got the sort of lead role as the scout, the baseball agent kind of started this whole thing rolling.
It's a solid cast. I'll probably, if I don't watch it in the theaters, I'm going to pick it up at some point and, you know, either rent it or library or something and watch it.
I'm sure more info will probably come out about it as it gets closer, and I'm interested to see some of the trailers and that kind of stuff on it, just to see, you know, how they work it.
Yeah.
Because it is really interesting.
It does strike me as an interesting early summer family movie, you know, something you could take everybody to see, around the end of the school year kind of thing.
Get you in the mood for baseball season.
There you go. Of course, it doesn't come out till May 16th, and baseball season will be in two months in already. But all right, so the next film on our list is one that has actually gotten some early press, even though it's not coming out until May 30th of 2014, so, you know, basically Memorial Day weekend 2014, and that's Maleficent. Go for it, Scott. Tell us about Maleficent.
basically, it's the storyline of the villain out of Sleeping Beauty, and it's the story of Sleeping Beauty from Maleficent's perspective, is the way I understand it. Now, I've heard a ton of press about it and the cast with Angelina Jolie and stuff, as her playing Maleficent. As far as details about the storyline and that kind of thing, I haven't heard a ton about it, but the whole concept of taking a villain out of a classic like Sleeping Beauty and spinning that movie into her perspective really interests me, and I'm intrigued to see how it's going to turn out. I can't imagine it's going to be anything but amazing, because of what I've heard about it and just the fact that how they're twisting the storyline of Sleeping Beauty into this. I'm interested to see it.
Yeah, anybody else looking forward to this one?
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it, in part because my wife likes to watch the Once Upon a Time.
Sure.
Where they've taken a lot of, you know, you're seeing things more from the Evil Queen side. And when you start to see Hook as more of a person as opposed to a caricature to against Peter Pan, some of the villains become a lot more interesting. And so I really am looking forward to seeing kind of this backstory as to why does she hate Princess Aurora so much. And then as a little side note, I think I'll probably have to see it because Peter Capaldi is in it. And he's going to be the new Doctor Who's. Well, the new Doctor,
right?
Technically.
Yeah. Now, this is another one that has a really interesting cast. I mean, Angelina Jolie, Elle Fanning, Peter Capaldi, as you mentioned, Miranda Richardson. This is a good deep cast as well. The only thing to me that makes me a little nervous is that the team putting this together is essentially the same team that put together Snow White and the Huntsman, which I didn't find particularly compelling. I'm hoping that maybe they learned something in putting that one together that, you know, will help make this a stronger film. I think there's a better story here than Snow White and the Huntsman anyway. And yes, Eric, I agree. Go ahead and say what you were just saying.
Oh, I was just saying a better female lead is going to figure in, I think, pretty importantly here. Maleficent is actually my wife's favorite character, and I think we're definitely going to go see it. And like we were saying before, the way that Disney is sort of giving alternate takes on characters, showing them from a different point of view, and things like Once Upon a Time, is really, really working. I mean, it opens up depth of character, and this is going to be, I think, a fantastic way to look at the story from another point of view.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. And I hope that they learn something from Snow White and the Huntsman. I think they've got better source material to work from, because I think that the story here from Maleficent is just a better story than, Snow White and the Huntsman. But I'll just have to wait and see, because I think that when you're telling a story from the villain's perspective, it's got to be a compelling villain or it doesn't work. Now that one is probably more of a, you know, teenagers and up kind of film, I'm guessing. I don't know that watching, you know, things from the Evil Queen's perspective, from Maleficent's perspective, is quite what you want to do with your, you know, 7 and 8 year olds. But we do get one, and I'm surprised it's really only one, true traditional kids summer release from Disney. And I'll be blunt and say that I'm a little disappointed in what we're getting. The only, you know, summer kids movie we get from Disney in 2014 is the Planes sequel, Fire and Rescue. And even that doesn't come out until July 18th, 2014. Richard, what do you think?
Yeah, I liked Cars. Cars 2 is okay. I kind of enjoyed Planes. But now we're getting pretty much into the fourth installment of that whole Cars universe, and I'm wondering how much is there for them to still do. I'm kind of worried that sometime around 2015 or 2016 we'll have Trains, the movie, you know, which will be some Chuggington kind of thing, and then we can have Planes, Trains, and Automobiles. It just strikes like, yeah, they're going to keep hammering it because it works, and there's plenty of merchandising tie-ins that you can do to it. But I was expecting something new. I like the Cars world, but I wanted them to visit something new as opposed to just keep going back to the same well.
Right.
So my kids will like it. It's kind of an easy thing. Take the kids. They like the animated stuff. They like the Planes. But I'm going to watch it going, okay, it's here. I'm here with my kids. They're having fun. But it's probably not good. It wouldn't be one that without kids that I would go hunt down and see.
Yeah. How about you, Eric?
Yeah, I think this is a matinee at best. Or maybe wait for it to come out on videotape for like travels around the holidays. The Planes movie, I think I liked better than I expected to, but my expectations were very low coming in. So I'm, you know, happy to, you know, take the kids out to see it. They'll enjoy it. I don't think we'll make an impression on anybody. It just seems kind of fluffy and, you know, not really much more than a way to print some more money,
right,
for Disney.
Yeah, and I think my big disappointment is that, you know, like I said, that's it for 2014. The Good Dinosaur was originally scheduled for a 2014 release. That was supposed to be the Pixar dinosaur movie. They just decided to change directors on Good Dinosaur, so it got pushed back to 2015. And it just seems like there's a huge gaping hole in Disney's 2014 movie slate, where there's a lot of interesting things for sort of teenagers and older, and just not much for the younger kids that is sort of traditionally been, you know, Disney's bread and butter.
Yeah, I'm looking over some of the for next summer, and there's just nothing really there for kids. There's plenty of good stuff coming out, Disney and non-Disney, for the teenage and up crowd, but yeah, you know, X-Men is coming out, and another Godzilla. You know, well, okay, I wouldn't say the fourth installment of Transformers gives me a lot of hope, but but there's stuff that teenagers are going to want to see. But there's a lot of stuff here. I'm not going to get to see 22 Jump Street. I'm seeing How to Train Your Dragon 2, which might be good. But other than that, summer looks really just dead as far as kids' films go.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree, and you know that's how we spend our summers. So I know I'm harping on it at this point, but it's sort of disappointing. I mean, that's a big part of our summer usually, is, you know, every couple of weeks, you know, catching the latest of the kids movies, and it's just not going to happen. All right, well, I've probably whined about that enough, so we'll move on to the August 1st, 2014 scheduled release of Guardians of the Galaxy, which is another Marvel Cinematic Universe release and is probably the least well-known element of the Marvel Cinematic Universe to hit screens from Disney in this incarnation of Marvel Cinematic Universe. Scott, you were talking about this a little bit before we started recording. You know, talk about your reaction initially to Guardians of the Galaxy.
I have never heard of this. Now, granted, I'm not a big comic book guy, but when I started looking into it, it's interesting how they're working it. Beings as I've never heard of it, and it's tied into the Avengers and the Captain America movies and all that stuff. It's just interesting. It's a whole completely different aspect of Marvel comic movies or Marvel comics that if you're not into it, you're not going to know about it.
Yeah, that's probably true. I don't know, Richard. You're a bigger comics devotee. What do you think about Guardians of the Galaxy and really it being the kind of final lead in to Avengers 2?
Well, I guess I like comics and I follow certain of my characters, but these were kind of in the. I think I've heard of them, but I don't really know anything about them. The more I read on it and the more I look over like the wiki pages for it, and I might have to go hunt down some back issues. I'm kind of looking forward to it mainly to see whether or not they tie it into any of the other cinematic universe, like where they bring it in. Zoe Saldana is Gamora, and she's the adopted daughter of Thanos, who shows up at the end of Avengers 1.
Right.
And, who goes after Earth courts death, and he smiles. So I'm kind of geeking over that. Looking, we've got a potential tie-in here. I think Avengers 2 is Ultron, though, right?
Avengers 2 is Ultron, and we've already been kind of given a heads up that it's Ultron, but it's a different twist on Ultron and on Age of Ultron than we're used to from the comics. Because remember that we're not going to be introduced to Ant-Man until after Avengers 2.
Right.
Or at least he's not going to have his own film until after Avengers 2.
Yeah, so maybe they're kind of starting to lay the groundwork for Avengers 3 or for one of the other characters to have a movie, although really, Thanos is kind of you need all the Avengers because, most of them can't stand toe-to-toe with them on their own. I think they'll be good, potentially, but I think it's going to be one of those where it's the comic fans that it's going to appeal to, and if they don't really push it, going to wind up with the same kind of Mars Needs Mom, Carter or something, where the geeks might want to like it, and no one else will go see it at all.
All right, what do you think,
Eric? Richard?
Yeah, I mean, it's a lot of characters we haven't seen anywhere else before, and maybe that's a way for Marvel to pull characters into the parks since, a lot of the main characters are taken up by other theme parks in the greater Orlando area at this point. Having a talking, pistol-toting raccoon in your movie might let you, put one of those in your parks. I don't know which park would be best for that, but it doesn't quite fit with Animal Kingdom. Few of the animals there carry weapons, but anyway,
unless they're on Dinosaur
Avatar Land, they'll carry weapons.
That's true. Good point. I don't know. It's interesting. I mean, we're talking about Peter Capaldi, and who's going to be the next Doctor on Doctor Who? Karen Gillan, who was. Played Amy Pond with the 11th Doctor, is going to be in this one. And for that matter, Chris Eccleston, who played the 9th Doctor, is in Thor 2. So there's like this steady pipeline from the Doctor Who universe into the Marvel universe here, and the greater Disney universe. But just for Guardians of the Galaxy, it's kind of got an epic scope. I mean, you're dealing with a lot of space opera elements, but selling it is going to be a little tough. I think they're going to have to use some of the touchstones from the other Marvel movies to tie it in if they want to be successful with it.
Yeah, I mean, what is intriguing to me about Guardians of the Galaxy is how different it is from the rest of the Marvel Cinematic Universe films, because they've really done a lot, and I've been so happy to see in the vast majority of the Marvel Cinematic Universe films that they've made a real return to more traditional filmmaking. They don't over-rely on CGI in those movies. They shoot on locations and they use real props and they, use costume and use makeup and use real filmmaking elements to put together those films. And I think it gives them a certain feel that I really appreciate, because we don't get that often enough in big scale movies anymore, in my opinion. On the other hand, Guardians of the Galaxy is going to be a lot of CGI. It has to be. You know, you can't do a genetically engineered gun-toting raccoon otherwise. So I'm going to be very interested to see what the feel of the film is and how they blend it in with the overall feel of the rest of their cinematic universe. The cast is terrific. I mean, you've mentioned Zoe Saldana. You've mentioned, you know, some of the folks crossing over from the Doctor Who universe. You've also got, Jimon Hounsou in the film, Benicio del Toro, John C. Reilly, Glenn Close, Bradley Cooper, Vin Diesel. It's a really star-studded cast, and people who are well-suited to a great action film. I'm going to be really interested to see how they sell it, because I think that it's got the unfortunate potential to be, you know, to get John Carter'd if they don't do it right. And everything that I've seen says that Guardians of the Galaxy is an important step to Avengers 2. And so I hope people go to see it, if for no other reason than to give them the, you know, context for Avengers 2. And hopefully, even if they just showed up for that purpose, they get there and enjoy the film. Does that make sense?
Yeah, and like you said about the CGI, they've got a great cast. I hope they've been kind of a tool to the vehicle that, if that makes sense, because, like, you know, in the second trilogy, there was a lot of, let's use CGI because we can, not because it had any specific purpose. For Guardians, you have to use CGI to get the characters to look, or the actors to look like the aliens are supposed to be playing. Hopefully they don't do more than that.
Yeah.
And use CGI for everything.
Agreed. Agreed. All right. So, by October of 2014, October 10th to be exact, we finally get another kid-focused movie from Disney. You know, looking back at the schedule, it's 3 months almost after Planes. We finally get another kid movie from Disney, and it's the live-action screen adaptation, been in the makings for years, of Alexander and the Terrible, Horrible, No Good, Very Bad Day. And Scott, why don't you lead off the discussion of Alexander?
I am really excited about this. It's a classic book that I read as a kid, and I'm sure everybody else has at some point in their life, and how this kid's day did not go right. Nothing went right, as a matter of fact. And I'm interested to see how, you know, it's a kid's short story. I'm interested to see how they're going to be able to bring this into a live action, full-length film. I'm sure it's going to be great. The storyline behind it is a great classic, so I'm excited for it.
How about you, Eric?
Yeah, I mean, just looking at the cast, you got Steve Carell is playing the dad, Jennifer Garner playing the mom. Got assorted other good people in there. Megan Mullally is in there. Jennifer Coolidge playing roles. I mean, it's not a book that I think my kids have read, but, you know, we could prep them with it before we go. So it's not one that's been on my radar, but, you know, given the cast, it's probably worth checking out.
Yeah, we're looking forward to this big time around here. You know, not only was Alexander and the Terrible, Horrible, No Good, Very Bad Day my younger brother's favorite book growing up, so I'm certainly well aware of it. But, you know, around our house, we've been referring to, Not a Good Day as an Alexander Day for as long as I can remember. You know, even before we had kids, my wife and I would say, you know, get home from work after a really awful day and just say, it's been an Alexander day, we're going out to dinner. And you know, knew instantly that when you say it's been an Alexander Day, nothing went right. It was terrible, horrible, no good, very bad. And so I'm really looking forward to seeing how they do this. And I agree. I like the cast. Richard, you were mentioning that you may be the voice of dissent on this one.
Well, I think it's got a really solid cast. I'm at best cautiously optimistic.
Okay.
Mainly because I like the book. My kids like the book. We've enjoyed the book. We also like, say, The Grinch and The Lorax. And those were fine for half-hour shows. The longer they make that they try and stretch these short books into hour-and-a-half movies, I get really hesitant about how good it's going to be. You know, the live-action Grinch with Jim Carrey, I wanted to like it. I really wanted to be like a new Christmas classic that we could watch the animated and watch the live version. And it's just full of all sorts of like, oh, we need extra fillers. So what are we going to do for this extra 3 minutes? I know, let's throw this sequence in that makes no sense. Or it's just an added, it's obviously there to bulk up the film to get to time.
Well, that's a good point. I mean,
there's a lot of stuff that can go wrong in a day. So maybe they'll create things in that same vein. But yeah, it's a short story. I'm curious how they'll make it fit an hour and a half.
Right. Well, that's a good point, and we will have to see, you know, how they handle that. I don't know, it'll be interesting to me because this is an adaptation. You wonder, you know, how much they're going to be concerned about being true to the 1972 book, because you know there are sequels. There are more Alexander books than just Alexander and the Terrible, Horrible, No Good, Very Bad Day. And so the question becomes: Do they have the rights to include things from the other books? Because that gives them, you know, some more material, source material to build from.
Yeah.
And I don't know the answer to that.
Probably still hate lima beans, so, you know, that's...
That's true. All right, so that's Alexander. And then we get to, you know, if Guardians of the Galaxy wasn't the most bizarre superhero film that we were going to get from Walt Disney, maybe ever, we get an, in my opinion, probably even more bizarre superhero film from Disney in the same year as Guardians of the Galaxy, just a few months later, when in November of 2014, scheduled to be November 7th, we get Big Hero 6. And, Eric, do you want to take a stab at Big Hero 6?
No. But well, I mean, this is sort of a, you know, throw some people together to be a superhero team. It's another Marvel Comics property. It's a guy and his robot and team up with some other kind of would-be crime fighters, and they try to, you know, figure out a criminal plot and defeat the villains. So I'm guessing it's got sort of this, you know, coming of age element to it, and would have to, you know, sort of deal a lot with those tropes to come across as anything good. You know, it's not one of these big blockbuster, huge battle type things. I think it's going to be more, just my guess is it's going to be more sort of character focused, how these people develop, how they become, you know, heroic, you know, is there a hero in all of us type thing.
Right. Well, and remember that a big piece of this is a truly an animated film. You know, it's been being done solely by Walt Disney Animation Studios. The folks from Marvel are kind of available to consult, but they're not involved in the production. They just kind of handed it over to, you know, Walt Disney Animation Studios. It's something that they pitched to Lasseter, and Lasseter said, well, okay, that one sounds interesting, and decided to run with it. Yeah, this is Iger attempting to, you know, leverage the acquisition of Marvel across the other business units at Disney. I don't know. I mean, Richard, what do you think? You're more the comic guy. What's your take?
they're actually a superhero team I knew nothing about. You know, I had never even heard of them, and I'm not sure how connected they are to the rest of the Marvel universe. Actually,
yeah, clearly not very directly. They strike me as being sort of Marvel's foray into the sort of manga anime world. There's a whole lot of sort of you know, Japanese and pseudo Japanese culture that's there.
Yeah, and the artwork is very emblematic of that in the comics.
Yeah, I mean, and if you look at even the names, I mean, you know, the city that this is supposed to take place in is, you know, San Francisco, which is, you know, San Francisco and Tokyo shoved together. You know, the characters have names like Wasabi No Ginger, Honey Lemon, and Gogo Tamago.
Yeah. I think it could do well, and I think what will help it is the people that are kind of averse to going to the Marvel films, like, oh, what's another superhero one? Depending on how this one gets pitched, it could be, you know, the young superhero by accident with his trusty robot companion who is thrown in with a bunch of other young and experienced heroes who have to try and save the day.
Right.
Oh, well, that doesn't sound like a comic book film. That sounds like, you know, more of an action superhero film. You know, closer to, I guess, like The Incredibles as opposed to Captain America.
Sure.
So it might have that same kind of appeal.
Now, what do you think, said, Scott?
I had never heard of this, along with a couple other of the Marvel Comics ones, but I don't know. It seems interesting. When I first started looking into it, I ran across words that I couldn't even fathom to try and pronounce. but I don't know. I know, after hearing you guys talk about it a little bit, I know the Japanimation kind of stuff is on a rise or on a peak right now. And that might be a market that they're trying to hit. But to me, from what I've seen about it, you know, this is one of, what, three animated films or two animated films coming out in 2014 from Disney. Is it just a filler for the year? I don't know.
Well, it's an interesting question. It strikes me as a serious effort by Disney to reach out for the younger boy audience. You know, they have tried to kind of keep them in the fold by, you know, not calling their movies Rapunzel and the Snow Queen and instead calling them, you know, Tangled and Frozen. But the reality is that they're still, you know, female protagonist stories and princess stories. And so I think that this is an honest effort to make something that appeals directly to boys. And for that, I'm glad. I've got a six, almost seven-year-old boy. And the other thing is that what he watches on a daily basis is, you know, he loves Pokemon and Beyblade and what's the other one he watches? I can't think of the name of it. But it's another of those sort of, you know, Japanimation type competition, you know, television shows. And I think that once he sees the previews for this, he's going to go crazy for it. My initial reaction was, why the heck are they doing this? The more I look at it, the more I like it. I think that if they handle it right, it's got a lot of potential. You know, there are some almost Iron Giant-ish opportunities here, or at the very least Astro Boy opportunities here for the relationship between the boy and his robot. There's, you know, the same kind of you know, group working together to overcome their foes that you get, you know, from watching my son's Beyblade stuff with him. I think he's going to slurp it up. And I think that's the market they're shooting for. And if they do it right, it's a home run. And I bet we get a series of them.
Yeah, Aaron, one more thing.
Sure.
You know, I was wondering if we might see some more cross-pollination between the Studio Ghibli stuff that is sort of under the Disney umbrella, at least for the U.S. distribution, that sort of take on story and artwork coming into this. I mean, it's not pitched that way, but some of the elements sound like it could use that sort of take.
Yeah, I mean, it's an interesting thought. I think that the Studio Ghibli stuff, for the most part, is... it's a different kind of storytelling. I mean, this is really a superhero story. And it's a... like I said, it really, the more I read about it, reminds me more and more of Pokemon and Beyblade and those kind of things, where you've got this, you know, band of characters working together in competition. You know, it's just competition with bad guys instead of competition with, you know, the other Beyblade team or, you know, the other Pokemon folks in tournaments. And like I said, it's got so much potential because there's not anything happening in the movie world for these boys. It's just not there. I mean, they're not making more Pokemon movies. There's no Beyblade movies that I know of out there. And, you know, my son and his friends are going to be standing in line and they'll want to see it over and over again if it's done well. Frankly, even if it's just not done poorly. But I don't know. I mean, I may be the only one with, you know, a target audience child here among the group. So we're almost through the whole slate. A couple we know not as much about because they're farther out. The first is a film that Disney's been sort of teasing in some interesting ways for it being this long before its release, and that is the December 12th, 2014 expected release of the movie Tomorrowland. Scott, you want to give us your take on Tomorrowland?
I can try.
Good luck.
Yeah. So it seems like a real sci-fi oriented, you know, two kids, really smart inventor type kids, kind of dip into almost like a different realm of the universe or something or other, and take their collective memories to like build Tomorrowland, as they call it, or something like that. It's intriguing on a science or a sci-fi kind of level, but from what I've seen about it, I don't really understand completely the plot behind it yet.
I don't know that anybody knows enough about it to really say too much. I don't know. Eric, what do you think?
Pretty much in the same boat. I mean, just looking at who's behind it. It was written by Damon Lindelof, so. You know, who knows what could happen. George Clooney is the star, so that is, I think, promising.
Well, and Hugh Laurie is the villain.
Hugh Laurie is the villain. So
yeah, the cast behind it looks pretty good.
But we don't really know enough about it, I guess, to say a whole lot yet, other than to say that it's sci-fi something. There's some alternate reality kind of stuff going on, and that the team behind it is pretty impressive. You know, like we were saying, a great cast, and, you know, Damon Lindelof working with Brad Bird. I don't know, Richard, anything else that you want to add?
Yeah, it sounds like it could be interesting, but the little snippets I'm getting here, I want to see a trailer first.
Sure.
Yeah. Until there's a trailer, I don't think I really know enough to say other than the cast looks good, but what's it about, really? I'm waiting. I expect to see a trailer probably May, is my guess. They might put it on like the Winter Soldier or something. Disney does a lot of that.
Yeah. Right.
So maybe once I've seen a trailer, I'll suddenly look at it and go, oh, I gotta see this, or like, okay.
Yeah, I mean, even the you know, the music. I mean, they're bringing in Michael Giacchino to do the music, so you know, I love his score work. it's got potential from all of the elements of it to be really good, but there's just so little information out that I don't think there's anything else we could say about it. Disney is trying hard to do the whole viral marketing thing with it. They had a scavenger hunt kind of game thing going on leading up to this past summer's D23 event in California. I don't know what to say. Hopefully Disney's learning something about film marketing from the experience with marketing John Carter and Lone Ranger over the last couple of years, and we get more intelligent marketing that markets the films themselves. We've had this discussion probably off the podcast before. I'm going to rant for a minute. Disney's marketing of its films for adults, its live action movies, has been awful for the last several years. And it strikes me is that it's because what they're doing is deciding what they think the audience is supposed to be for the film and then promoting to that audience instead of just promoting what the movie is. And so you get people going to the movie who don't get what they're expecting because what was promoted to them is different than what's on the screen. And you get other people who never even show up to see it because Disney didn't bother to tell them what this was about. And if they weren't in the imaginary target demographic, then there was no effort made to reach them. And if they continue that model, Tomorrowland is going to flop miserably. That's just my take. Okay, that's my rant. If anybody wants to argue with me, feel free.
No, I was actually going to kind of back you up. I think the Marvel films have done very, very well simply because there's a very built-in audience. But if they don't actively market things, I don't think like Guardians of the Galaxy or Big Hero 6 will do well at all because people won't – they won't realize that it's there. They won't know what it's about. They'll just – yeah, it's another movie. Oh, but hey, this other one that we've seen commercials for all the time is out. Let's go see it instead.
Yeah, I mean, my big fear with a film like Guardians of the Galaxy is a great example, is that they're going to decide that the target market for Guardians of the Galaxy is, you know, 18 to 35-year-old males, and they're going to build trailers around what they think 18 to 35-year-old males want, and they're going to show that, and as a result, we're not going to get, you know, the humor in the film, or we're not going to get the, you know, emotional impact of the film because, hey, 18 to 35-year-old men don't care about emotional impact. And they'll leave all the heart of the movie out, and so people won't go watch it. And I think that definitely happened to John Carter, and that happened to some extent to Lone Ranger, and it killed both of them. Despite the fact that they spent huge amounts of dollars, quote unquote, promoting them. Well, the last film on the list for 2014, coming out as a Christmas release, and it's only recently kind of come together. I don't know there's a whole lot to say, but Disney is bringing the theatrical musical Into the Woods to the big screen. And Eric, I know that you're a Broadway musical fan. So what do you think of Into the Woods being a theatrical film?
Well, it's interesting. I mean, it's going to be another gloss on some of those same fairy tale characters we've been seeing come through the Disney machine. I think that, you know, it's obviously has been a very successful musical. And Disney has a pretty good track record of doing good musicals, at least in the animated area. So I think that they could make some of these, you know, things more iconic in the general, in the film going audience versus the theater going audience, if they follow through well with it. Again, the cast looks good. An actress you may have heard of, Meryl Streep, is in it. Johnny Depp, who is, you know, amazingly enough, it took until now for his name to come up in this discussion of Disney movies.
That's right.
This evening, because it seems like he's in everything that comes out of Disney. Emily Blunt, Anna Kendrick, Chris Pine, so Tracy Ullman. So it's another great cast. And, you know, it's, like I said, a very successful musical. And, you know, it's very promising on all those tracks.
Okay, but on the other hand, you know, you have to be slightly concerned that in some form or another, Into the Woods being adapted for film has been in the works since the early 90s. So there has to be something that's been getting in the way for the last 20 years.
Yeah, they were just waiting for all these people to be available at once to make a movie.
They've been perfecting it.
It's at least getting made at this point, so that's, you know, I think some cause for optimism. I mean, there are other projects that have been, you know, talked about for that long and that have never made it to screen.
Sure.
So, you know, I think they're set up for success with this, and you know, the only thing that can fail really is marketing and execution. I think they've got good people for the execution, and they'll just have to do the marketing. I mean, it'll come out around Christmas. That's a good time to put out a movie.
Right.
And like I said, they're really set up for success with this. And, we've talked about some failures in marketing, but, you know, they certainly will have a built-in audience for this. You know, how they reach people outside of that built-in audience is going to determine whether it's a modest hit or a huge hit, I think.
Okay. Anybody else have thoughts on Into the Woods?
I know the storyline behind this. Never seen the musical or anything, but the whole concept behind it, you know, you had mentioned being in the works since the early 90s. I'm excited with the cast that they have, that the execution, like Eric said, is going to be, should be well enough. I'm interested to see how they're going to promote this, because this could be a stellar movie. Bring in a whole bunch of classic Disney characters together on one screen. But if they're not going to market it like they should, then, you know, it could end up flopping, even though they got a stellar cast.
Yeah, I mean, I think that if they can just get it made, this one is pretty much a home run. You know, the only concern I have, and it's not a big one, is that as a mass market product, they may run into some issues. You know, the subtext of the relationship between Little Red Riding Hood and the Big Bad Wolf in the musical is a little on the edge for mainstream movie audiences. And I suspect that the, you know, theatrical film is going to have some of that drained out of it just for that reason. And it'll be interesting to see how the overall story holds up if that gets watered down.
So are you thinking the possibility of going from PG-13, which possibly what it might be now, or kicking it into R?
No. I think the opposite.
What's your thoughts?
My thought is that that they're going to make a PG-13 film, and the only question is whether, in doing so, the script is, you know, the story doesn't hold together like it should.
I gotcha.
And you know, it's got a great cast. If they can push it through, they will.
I think the only other thing I have to worry about is, you know, like a Russell Crowe in the Miserables situation, where people who do remember the Broadway musical end up really being critical
right.
of
hating
one of the actors' singing voices.
Right.
So
that's true. That's a possible threat. All right. Well, you know, we've rambled on much longer than we usually do, sharing our thoughts on a rather large slate of Disney films throughout 2014. Thanks for hanging with us and listening. We'd still love to hear your take. What are you looking forward to from Disney Studios in 2014? You can email us at podcast@dizdads.com. Visit our blog, dizdads.com. Tweet us at DizDads Podcast on Twitter, and participate in the discussions in our forums at boards.dizdads.com. And don't forget, we'll be coming to you live next Sunday from 7 until 9 p.m. We'll be broadcasting at mixlr.com/DizDadsPodcast, talking about extreme Disney experiences. Until next time, I've been Aaron Rittmaster with Eric Anderson.
Bye, everybody.
Richard Grady.
See ya.
And Scott Henny.
Until next time.
Brought to you by Fairy Tale Journeys, an authorized Disney travel planner. Let us help you put together your next magical Disney vacation. Find us at fairytalejourneys.com. Let us sweat the details so you don't have to.